This is Jim Inkster. We're joined now by a remarkable writer, Megan Angelo. She grew up in Pennsylvania, graduated from Villanova. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Glamour, among other publications, and she has her first novel. It's called Followers. Some things aren't meant to be shared. And Marie Claire says it's a deep dive into the social media dominance we currently live within. So this is a pertinent work, if there ever was one, Megan. How did you get into this realm as far as making this your first novel?
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me. I think, you know, I had been thinking about this stuff for a long time. I'm 35, and so I spent sort of the first half of my life with very little technology, and the second half of my life absolutely drowning in technology. And, you know, you get to a point where you're a little older and you start to think, what does this all mean, and do I want to live the rest of my life this way? So it's kind of where the story began.
And your journalism background has some relevance as far as the plot, doesn't it?
Definitely. I have worked in sort of cultural journalism and celebrity journalism for a really long time. I've done celebrity profiles for magazine covers, and I've done absolute crap work, you know, working the lines at red carpets and asking questions as the celebrities run by. So I have seen how the sausage gets made on every level.
Well, Marlo, his entire life is a live broadcast. What would be the worst life experience to have sent out to the entire world? Why do you think we're so fascinated by the lives of others when we cringe at the thought of exposing our own lives?
You know, it's such an interesting question. I think that we love to see the intimate details of other people's lives because it makes us feel less alone. It makes us feel better about our lives if our kitchen happens to look a little cleaner that day. Or in a perverse way, I think we're even more captivated when it makes us feel really bad about our lives and we feel like our home or our clothing or our vacations will never quite measure up to this. It's just sort of this weird distraction that you can get sucked up into endlessly because there's no shortage of content. There's no shortage of influencers out there going, look how beautiful everything is today in my world.
And a big part of the book is new technology, and there is a, quote, thought-altering device. How does this play in your work?
So I wanted to invent, for the parts of the book that are set in the future, that are set in 2051, I wanted to invent what the future of the smartphone would be. And what I kept coming back to was, I think we all forget that our smartphones are actually really inconvenient. Like, it's not convenient to hold something in your hand all the time. It's not convenient to bend your neck in a way that helps you look down over it. And so what I came up with was I wanted something that not only eliminated those things, but also eliminated the need for screens and for speech. So basically, the phone in the book is just something that people communicate with by thinking forcefully or intuiting, you know, give me directions to the pizza place instead of saying it out loud to Siri, and they get the feedback in their head as well. So it's very creepy, and it brings up kind of a lot of problems. But when I was inventing it, I was like, I hope I can get away with this. And then, sure enough, Elon Musk started testing something just like it. So you can always count on Elon Musk to back up your wild inventions.
Well, and his stock is doing rather well these days. But
yes.
Hopefully you have some Tesla. But your characters are largely female and quite often in our world, females are ignored, but you bring women to life, and I suppose in many cases you're writing about people you've known and maybe in some instances writing about yourself.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's definitely some of me in Orla, who is the protagonist in the book, who wants to be a writer and sort of gets sidetracked by this quest to make her roommate Kim Kardashian-level famous. But really what I related to in all of these women was I just wanted to write something about women who all wanted something really badly and would stop at nothing to get it, but for whom none of those things had to do with romance or sort of the traditional things that we see women chase in pop culture.
The book is Followers from our guest Megan Angelo, a veteran journalist who, as mentioned, has written for publications at the very highest levels of American journalism, and I'm sure even you are humbled by the response your book has gotten.
I'm totally humbled. I mean, for many years, this was just something, you know, on my desktop computer. And so it's very strange to have people, everyone from strangers to, you know, my own dad being like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe Marlo did that. It's a very surreal experience.
Well, how did the process get from the imagination to the printed page? I know this often is not a straight line. How did it happen for you?
Well, this book, because there are two timelines, you know, it's 2015 and 2051, because there was so much invention of the future to do, it definitely was kind of a piece-by-piece process, and things came a little bit at a time. It was also really interesting just the timing that I was writing it in. I mean, people keep saying to me, wow, this book is so timely, you've really captured everything, but the funny thing is I started writing this book in late 2015, most of 2016 I was outlining, and I sort of thought, this is going to feel really dark and outrageous, and I hope people will find it, you know, believable enough to enjoy the book. And then as time rolled on over the next few years, it began to feel more like a satire of the actual reality we're in right now.
Well, it's told from alternating perspectives of Orla and Marlo, and followers traces the paths of these women as they wind through time toward each other and toward a cataclysmic event that will send America into lasting upheaval. 2051 is not that long, not that far in the distance. We're talking three decades away. You're young enough that you'll see 2051, I'm sure, Megan. But do you think our world is going to change as much in the next 30 years or maybe more than it has in the past?
You know, what I think will happen and what in some ways I hope happens is, you know, the thing in the book that connects the two timelines that sort of really changes America is there is kind of this big event that has to do with data coming out, things that you wouldn't want coming out, and all of a sudden your phone has really enacted your worst nightmare on you. And I don't wish that on anybody. I hope that's not exactly how our country changes, but I do think we must be headed towards a moment where we find the bottom in terms of social media and our dependence on technology. It just feels like how much further can we go before at least some people start to think maybe this isn't the best way to live.
Well, this complicated female friendship that evolves in the book begins in a tiny Manhattan apartment in 2015. And you know New York City well, and it's still, as a good friend of mine, Gus Weil, used to say, the center of the universe.
Yeah, I lived in New York for all of my 20s, and I think it's so important that the book starts there because, you know, it is just, it really all starts with two young girls just trying to get famous. But it's funny, when you live in New York, it's easy to kind of assign a big worldly importance to everything you do. You feel like you are really at the center of the universe. And so they go after this selfish task with the great gusto of people who believe they're changing the world.
And your personal background is fascinating, and it certainly has had a big influence on your work, I'm sure. And you mentioned one of the things. This is an assignment that a lot of people would really relish, standing there on the red carpet waiting for these famous celebrities looking their Sunday best, as my mom used to say, walk by and smile. And, of course, they're not going to be a jerk because the whole world is watching. And you didn't like that. You didn't like that a lot, did you?
Well, look, you never see what's going on, really, on the other side of the rope. But basically you have a space the size of a cereal box to stand in. And let's just say I've had many tall, famous people not just step on my foot, but like really stay on my foot for the length of an interview.
And they almost always say pretty close to the same thing. Or were there any surprises along the way? Did anyone ever give you a response under those circumstances that was enlightening or inspiring?
Absolutely not. I wish I had a great story for you, but yes, you've got exactly right. Red carpet sound bites are packaged exactly the same way that cookies are packaged going down the line in a packaging plant. Like, it's just the same cookie every 3 feet, and that's it. Then we all go home.
Was there ever an outfit that caught your eye, like, my goodness, I can't believe she or he is wearing this?
Oh, you know what? It's so funny because I'm sure I've seen many, many outrageous outfits, but in that context, you don't even register because you understand what's behind them. It's just that everyone is trying to get the grabbiest picture, and everything is so orchestrated that it's not like you're sitting there thinking, wow, this person put together a really great or crazy look. I can see all the building blocks behind it, and it takes some of the charm out of it for me.
But you never had one of these famous people take a punch at you or call you names for putting a camera in their face or anything like that, have you?
No, definitely not. I mean, I'm lucky I always worked for outlets that people like, so that kind of gives you a leg up. And, celebrities have always been very kind to me. I've never been screamed down. I think I got screamed down by a publicist at Fox News who worked for Roger Ailes once, but that's about it. That was just on the phone, so not too scary.
Now, you once wrote about NRA TV. That must have been quite an assignment.
Yeah, that was really fascinating. I think this was maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I believe NRA TV is actually on its way out now. I'd have to double check. But yes, they have a whole, they sort of launched a online television channel that was specifically aimed a lot towards women. There was a lot of programming for women, trying to rally women around gun culture. There were even like fashion shows where it would show you how to, you know, conceal carry, but still look great for date night, that kind of stuff.
And in her meteoric rise to where she is, Megan is married with three kids. So you are a busy person.
I'm very busy. I'm hiding in one of their rooms right now. It's like really hard to find a quiet spot around here.
Well, it's a fascinating book, and I'm sure the first of many, and I understand another one's coming soon that will also involve women. It's Followers, the first novel from a name we're going to hear for a long time, Megan Angelo. Megan, congratulations and thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks so much.